Welcome to the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine. Meet him, greet him, treat him, and street him. Today's date is June 2nd, 2014, and I am your skeptical host, Ken Milne. The title of today's podcast is Sunny Days, Pediatric Pain Control in the Emergency Department. Our guest skeptic is Dr. Anthony Crocco, Division Head and Medical Director of Pediatric Emergency Medicine at McMaster University. Welcome back to the SGEM, Anthony.
Thanks a lot, Ken. It's great to be here.
Now, last time we got together, we did a ranthony on cough medicine, and that went over really well.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun, and I've had some good feedback from that ranthony.
Now, this time, we were at the Canadian Association of Emergency Medicine meeting in Ottawa, and the theme is capitalizing on excellence. What do you think of the meeting so far?
So far, Ken, the meeting's been great. There were some really good lectures throughout the pediatric track, and got back from a lecture now on leadership and leadership skills, which I found very, very useful.
And CAPE introduced something really unique this year and something that they haven't done before, and that's CAPE TV. I hope people check out CAPE.ca and check out those videos on CAPE TV. I even did a new Bat Doc video.
Excellent.
I'm thinking, we're in the Capitol. Wouldn't it be a Capitol idea if we did two pediatric papers this episode instead of just one?
You know what, Ken? That's a great idea. And in fact, in the last year, there's a couple of papers that are very related, and I think we should probably talk about them together.
Well, I know you, Anthony. You're a passionate man. You have many things that you care deeply about. Non-medical stuff like snowboarding, music, great food. But you're also very passionate about pediatric emergency medicine. What topic did you want to discuss on today's episode of the SGEM?
Well, Ken, today what I'd like to talk about is how we can better manage pain in the emergency department when children come in with injury or painful illnesses. And one of the things that sometimes people will talk about is, you know, how do we manage or treat pain? We really can't control pain because that's an experience that the child is having, but we can help them manage that and we can treat that with medication.
Well, the term used is oligoanalgesia, and it's a big deal in emergency medicine. Oligoanalgesia means inadequate or lack of pain control. And there's a lot of research going on about that. And it's not just pediatric patients, Anthony. It's also the elderly, mentally ill patients, certain races, and in some areas, uninsured patients have been shown to also receive a lack or inadequate pain medication.
This is very true, Ken. Certainly there are a lot of patients at risk for this. And we know from some of the research that's been done, and one of my good friends and colleagues, Dr. Samina Ali, has led the charge in trying to research and advocate for pediatric pain management. And she and her colleagues have found that not only in pediatric emergency centers, but across the board, big centers, small centers, pediatric centers, combined emerges, we all do, sadly, a very bad job of controlling pediatric pain.
It's a problem, and if you're listening, we can do better. So let's figure out a way to do better. Let's start addressing this problem of oligoanalgesia with our first paper. The case scenario is a 2-year-old who presents to the emergency department with a simple laceration to his forehead. You decide to use a tissue adhesive rather than sutures to close the wound. What's the clinical question?
So the clinical question is, does a topically applied analgesic decrease pain in children undergoing laceration repair with tissue adhesive?
And could you give us the reference for this, Anthony?
Sure. The reference is Harmon S. et al. The title of the paper is Efficiency of Pain Control with Topical Lidocaine, Epinephrine, Tetracaine During Laceration Repair with Tissue Adhesive in Children, a Randomized Controlled Trial. And it was found in CMAJ 2013.
So, Anthony, you know that we start with the PICO question. So what was the population in this study?
Ken, the population in this study were children 3 months to 17 years old who presented to the emergency department with a laceration less than 3 centimeters.
And what was the intervention they were using in the study?
So the intervention they looked at, which hopefully most of your listeners have heard of, was topically applied lidocaine epinephrine tetracaine, also known as LET gel, and they applied this 45 minutes prior to the adhesive repair.
And what did they compare it to?
Their comparison was topically applied placebo gel, which was also applied 45 minutes prior to adhesive repair.
And the last part of the PICO is outcome.
Yeah, so they had primary and secondary outcomes like most papers, and their primary outcome was the amount of pain experienced during the adhesive repair. The secondary outcomes they looked at was physician rating of difficulty of the repair, physician reporting of wound hemostasis prior to the repair, physician prediction of experimental group, specifically, could they guess, did the child get lidocaine, epinephrine, tetracaine gel, or placebo? And then were there any unscheduled follow-up visits?
And so the author's conclusion from the paper was, quote, treating minor lacerations with lidocaine, epinephrine, and tetracaine before wound closure with tissue adhesive reduces rating of pain and increases the proportion of pain-free repairs among children aged 3 months to 17 years. This low-risk intervention may benefit children with lacerations requiring tissue adhesives instead of sutures. End of quote. Anthony, let's take the BEAM critical appraisal tool and ask the 11 quality checklists. So number one, were these ED patients?
Yes, Ken, they were. They were pulled from the emergency department and certainly represent the patients that we see.
Were the patients randomized?
Yes, they were.
And did they conceal the randomization?
They certainly did.
Were they analyzed into their right groups that they were assigned?
No, sadly, there was no intention to treat analysis.
So let's keep these things in mind. Were they recruited consecutively?
So it's a bit unsure from the documentation as to whether this was the case.
Do we know if the patients were similar with respect to their prognostic factors?
It appears that both groups were similar.
And were they unaware of which group they were allocated?
Yes.
And were they each group treated equally?
Yeah, aside from the intervention, both groups were treated equally.
And did they get at least follow-up for 80% or more patients?
Sadly, no.
Okay. And how about were all important patient outcomes considered?
Well, in this case, no, but many were.
And the final, the 11th question, was the treatment effect large enough and precise enough to be clinically significant?
Yes, in my opinion.
So, Anthony, what were the key results from this first paper we're reviewing?
Well, the level of pain, Ken, was lower, as measured by a visual analog scale, in the LET group, or lidocaine, epinephrine, tetracaine group, compared to the placebo.
And were there any other key results that you wanted to bring up?
Yeah, just over 51% of children experienced no pain with LET compared to 28% of children in the placebo group. So significantly more children experienced no pain at all with the application of the tissue adhesive. The wound hemostasis was better in the LET group compared to the placebo group. So 78% of patients in the LET group had hemostasis compared to 59% in the placebo group.
How about when they compared difficulty in wound repair?
There's really no difference in either group, so this was not something that was significant.
And was there any significant difference in follow-up visits?
No difference there either. But what was interesting was when it came to how the physicians were able to identify, they actually could tell, it seemed, that which patients actually had received LET versus placebo. And in fact, the physicians were able to correctly identify the experimental group in 73% of patients.
I was surprised, actually. I thought it would be closer to 100%, because when we use LET, you see the blanching of the skin and you go, oh, yep, we're ready to go now.
Yeah, it's a good point. And also, having used LET gel with tissue adhesive personally, and this is now just experience-based medicine, I have seen a significant response to that, and usually I can tell if I've used it or not.
Okay, so let's go through some commentary. Overall, this is a well-performed study on an important topic, oligoanalgesia. We want to make sure we're addressing pain in pediatric emergency departments. And controlling pain is often difficult in children, and LET gel is a non-invasive method of helping achieve this. And this study shows that a significant higher group of children were pain-free with their procedure. But you called out or identified some limitations. Do you want to just go through those now?
Yeah, so some of the limitations of this study, and we're always looking for the best evidence, not necessarily the perfect evidence, for which I have yet to find any perfect evidence. But some of the limitations of this study was that there was no intention to treat analysis, and also there was some poor follow-up. The ability to follow up was not made a mandatory requirement of inclusion into the study, so not surprisingly, the follow-up rate was lower. This undermines any conclusions about unplanned return to care issues. It would be interesting to know if there was any impact on wound healing by LET gel with tissue adhesive. This has not been raised as a major concern, but could have been studied with an established wound assessment score had this been done at a later date and also been done with placebo to see if there's any differences. The other thing about this was that there was unblinding. Almost 3/4 of physicians knew which children were in the treatment group, and so you wonder whether they may have been treated differently in the treatment group because the physicians actually knew that they had received LET gel.
So let's start wrapping up this first paper that we're going through. What's the bottom line in your perspective?
The bottom line is that for those of us who have seen kids who have had tissue adhesive used, we know that this can be very painful for kids, and that the use of LET gel, so lidocaine, epinephrine, tetracaine gel, in children with lacerations in the emergency department can decrease their pain experience.
And clinical application then, it sounds like you're going to be using it?
Absolutely. This has been a practice changer for me. I used to just put tissue adhesive on and wait for the children to sort of stop squirming. And now actually I've converted 100% to using LET gel prior to tissue adhesive, and I found a dramatic difference in these kids.
So when you approach these pediatric patients, what do you actually tell them when you're approaching them with this LET gel?
It's a good question. What I tell them is that we have a magic gel that's going to help make their cut all better and feel better, so that we can clean it out really well and get it and use some special glue and then send them home with a popsicle.
Nice. Everybody likes going home with a popsicle. Well, that wraps up our first study. If you're driving your car and you've already arrived at your shift, great. You can listen to paper number two on the way home. And if you are out for a run and you're getting some exercise while you're listening to this podcast, it's time to turn around and head back in. So paper number two, this next study, it takes an innovative way to address pain in the pediatric emergency department. And before we start this paper, I'd like to talk about something called child life specialists. I'd never heard of those, Anthony. Could you please explain what a child life specialist is?
Ken, that's a great question. We have child life specialists in our emergency department, and they're vital in how we operate our department. Child life specialists are usually university-trained specialists who have an understanding of different developmental stages in childhood and what information can be processed and what are some of the best ways for children to appreciate medical knowledge and be distracted. And where they come into our emergency department in terms of how useful they are is they provide a lot of education to children of different ages as to what's going to be happening to them, and they provide distraction during procedures or minor treatments so that the children don't resist as much and are distracted and enjoy their experience of being in the emergency department much more than they would were there no child life specialists.
Wow. Why is it just pediatric patients that get people like this? I mean, if I was sick or injured, I would like some middle-aged man life specialist attending to me. I mean, they'd play 80s music to distract me, they'd talk about great movies like The Princess Bride, and they'd explain everything in terms that like I could understand from the 80s, like, oh my god, totally gagged me with an NG tube, and we're gonna need to get a CT scan with some rads, dude. Okay, I know, that's enough Jeff Spicoli impersonations from Fast Times at Ridgemont High. Let's get to the second paper. The clinical scenario for this paper is a child presents to the emergency department and is going to need an intravenous line as part of their treatment. So what's the question we're going to address in this second paper?
So this paper addresses the question, does adding ambient music to standard care of pediatric patients prevent distress during painful procedures?
And can you give us the reference for this paper?
So this reference is, the title of the paper is Music to Reduce Pain and Distress in the Pediatric Emergency Department, a Randomized Controlled Trial. The primary author is Hartling, H-A-R-T-L-I-N-G, and it was published in JAMA Pediatrics 2013.
So let's run through the PICO. What was the population?
So the population was children 3 to 14 years old presenting to a pediatric emergency department requiring an IV and having an understanding of English.
And what intervention did they use?
So the intervention was standard care with music played through an iPod dock. The music that they included were The Planets, specifically Opus 32, Jupiter, Storms in Africa, Disco Beat, and Sunny Days, played at a standardized volume and played until the procedure was complete.
And so then their comparison group was?
So the comparison group was standard care without music, which I kind of think of as being standard care with awkward silence.
Yeah, like we're having right now.
Yeah.
All right, so what was the primary outcome?
So the primary outcome that they looked at was patient distress measured with the observational scale of behavioral distress revised, or OSBD-R.
And then they had secondary outcomes?
They did. They also looked at change in self-reported pain from baseline. They looked at heart rate. They looked at parent and healthcare provider satisfaction. And they looked at parental anxiety.
And so the author's conclusion from this second paper was, quote, music may have a positive impact on pain and distress for children undergoing intravenous placement. benefits were also observed for the parents and healthcare providers. End of quote. So let's rip through this quality checklist again. Number one, were these ED patients?
Yes, they were.
Were they adequately randomized?
Yes, they were.
Was the randomization concealed?
Yes, it was.
Were they analyzed in the right groups?
Yes, they were.
Were they recruited consecutively?
Sadly, no.
Oh, okay. Were the patients similar with respect to prognostic factors?
A little bit unsure here, Ken.
Were they unaware of their group allocation?
No, it'd be impossible to blind people to this procedure.
Were all groups treated equally except for the intervention?
Yes, they were.
Was the follow-up complete?
Yep.
Were all patient important outcomes considered?
Not all, but most.
And was the treatment effect large enough and precise enough to be clinically significant?
Sadly, no, not the primary outcome.
All right, so let's go through the results then and the primary outcome. What were they, Anthony?
So the results from this study showed no difference in the change in behavioral distress from pre-procedure to immediately after the procedure. The pain score in the standard group, or what I called the awkward silence group, increased throughout the procedure, but in the group with music actually remained the same, so did not go up during the procedure. There were no differences noted in heart rates or parental anxiety, and no significant difference in parental satisfaction were noted. Care providers were more satisfied and found the procedure easier with music, which isn't a bad thing.
No, I don't think that's a bad thing at all. So let's go through some commentary. I mean, overall, this is an interesting topic. Modification of the stress and painful experiences with non-pharmaceutical methods is in the best interest of the patients, families, and caregivers. Now, this is a relatively small study, and the wide confidence intervals and non-significant findings are a product of this. A larger study might find more definitive results. But there is little downside, however, and this is a very low-cost intervention. Anthony, want to bring in some limitations?
So some of the limitations of this study, well, number one, it would have been useful if the researchers had kept track of IV success rates as a secondary outcome. So did they actually get more successful IVs when music was playing? Secondly, blinding was done for those evaluating the video recordings of the subjects, but was, for obvious reasons, not possible for those in the room during the procedure. And so everyone in the procedure knew what group the child was randomized to. There were more boys in the standard group compared to the experimental group, 84% versus 50%, the effect of which is unknown. In addition, multiple subgroups and regression models were used, and these have high likelihood of finding erroneous significant results. So I always advise caution when this is the case, and in the future, it is recommended that these be very limited.
So Anthony, give us a bottom line from this second paper.
So I agree that there are potential benefits with music being played during procedures. There's some soft evidence from this paper, but since there's no downside and this is a very low cost, zero side effect intervention, I see no reason why we shouldn't be doing this routinely for children experiencing minor painful procedures.
Are you doing this currently in your institution?
Absolutely. Again, like I said at the top of this, we do have child life specialists, and they are very good about ensuring that children are distracted either with music or video games or an iPad or something while they're having painful procedures done. And that minimizes the pain experience for the child and makes the whole environment much easier.
Again, it's always nice to find out from an expert like yourself when you're approaching patients. What do you actually say to them? What do you start the conversation with? How do you bring this into the room?
So what I often tell parents and patients is, you know, we're going to have to do this procedure, but before we do this, I'm going to invite a child life specialist to come in and introduce themselves. They'll explain in a way that you understand exactly what's going to happen. And then they're going to find something that's going to be really fun for you to do while we're doing all of this. And that may include playing music, playing video games, watching a movie.
Well, that wraps up two pediatric papers in one podcast. Thank you, Anthony, for fitting this into your busy CAPE meeting schedule.
You know what, Ken? It's my pleasure, and I look forward to the next time.
Well, one thing listeners are always sending me emails about is, when are you going to do another Ranthony?
You know what, Ken? I'm actually working on two right now, both of which require a little bit of background research. And so as soon as I fit that in, I'm going to be ranting away, because there's not much more I like to do better than ranting.
So stay tuned, SGEM listeners. The rants will continue. Let's talk about the Keener contest, though. Last week's winner was Chris Nixon, yes, from Australia. Chris knew Max Planck was the German physicist who won the Nobel Prize in 1918 and is considered one of the founders of quantum theory. And his quote was, "A new scientific truth does not triumph by convincing its opponents and making them see the light, but rather because its opponents eventually die and a new generation grows up that is familiar with it. End of quote. Now, this week's question comes from the theme music we all recognize from watching Sesame Street called Sunny Days. Anthony, what's the Keener contest?
All right, the question this week is, Carol Spinney, a puppeteer who played Big Bird for decades on Sesame Street, also played one other key character. Name that character.
So if you know the answer, then send your answer to thesgem@gmail.com with Keener in the subject line. And if you're the first one with the correct answer, I will send you a cool skeptical prize. Anthony, will you take us out with the tagline?
Well, remember to be skeptical of anything you learn, even if you heard it on The Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine.
Talk to everyone next week.